championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer. I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, wherever you guys can find a podcast. Today we're going to be going over Larry Fedora joining the staff and talk about Texas's new home for wayward coaches and talk about how Tom Herman is trying to copy the Alabama model. Then get into the new commitments of Jalen Garth and Mookie Cooper, get into what they bring to the table, then go over Junior Days, Under Armour, and the visitor this weekend. We got a packed show for y'all. To sort of make up for missing on last week and earlier this week, let's go ahead and get into it, because Larry Fedora joining the staff was kind of a big news. It's really bringing to light what Tom Herman is trying to do, and even national news guys are starting to really understand it. And accept it. Cecil Hurt is an Alabama writer. When it came to the news of North Carolina coach or former coach Larry Fedora joining Texas staff as an offensive analyst, he said, "When there are no spaces available at Saban, Oaks, Rehab, and Recovery until October," Barrett Salee added, "you apply to Tom Herman's Center for Coaches Who Can't Coach Good and Want to Do Others Good Stuff Too." It's becoming a thing. And people are accepting it. Tom Herman is trying to build what Saban is doing with his analyst network.
Yeah, I think it's a smart thing to do. You know, everybody always talks about the resources Texas has. This is a great way to use one of those resources. And because as an analyst, you know, there's not really a way for him to get paid a bunch of money. I think there might even be a cap of some sort. But either way, analysts are kind of low man on the totem pole as far as pay goes. But what it does do is it allows you to get, you know, another great football mind in there, somebody who has head coaching experience, somebody who's either in your network or you can add to your network, who has been at the top of a big program before and knows maybe some tips or tricks to help a guy out. And the other thing that it does is, in addition to getting that football mind, expanding your network. If somebody leaves, you don't have to really go outside that network. You can promote, you know, if an offensive coach were to leave at some point, Larry Fedora could be a very good candidate, you know, to slide into that role at Texas. So it's a very smart way to add a lot of football knowledge to your organization and, you know, protect against some loss if that were to ever happen. And I think the good thing is, you know, Alabama has kind of become the place east of the Mississippi for this to happen. I mean, we saw what Butch Jones had there from Tennessee to Alabama, and, you know, countless other guys. We saw Major Applewhite reportedly going there. I know he's west of the Mississippi, but if maybe Texas could do this for, you know, to get some of the Big 12 coaches or Pac-12 coaches that are sent off, then maybe that would be a big benefit to them, since the style of play is a little bit more similar to what, you know, they do on the west side of the Mississippi. So very good overall for fans to puff their chest out a little bit, like, oh, look what we can afford. We can get help from a previous head coach. But it's just a good addition for a great football mind on staff at a very good cost and could have some future benefits as well.
Right. My initial reaction is pretty much the same. I'm a really big fan of trying to build this Alabama analyst network. And right, as if Texas can be the Western Alabama and the Alabama analyst network system, then go ahead and do it. For all the points you put out there, it's a great idea. And for Larry Fedora in specific, as long as he stays away from a mic, which he shouldn't be near as an analyst, it's a really good hire because of what he brings. And also, he's a good head coach, but he was a PR nightmare. So this will probably last for about 2-3 years, as it does with Alabama, before he's either brought up through the ranks to be, as you said, an offensive coordinator or somebody in the staff, or he, quote unquote, educates himself on his bad ideas and gets back onto the market. What he brings to the table, though, is what's really, really big for Tom Herman. That's probably one of the biggest reasons he's on the staff right now. There are three main things that really brings to the table that is why he's on the staff. Specifically, he's a quarterback guru. He's an analytics guru, and he's a spread guru. If you look at Tom Herman, that is exactly what Tom Herman is supposed to be. It's what he's billed to be. As a quarterback guru, he's an analytics guru and a spread guru as well. So you bring in another like mind to help you build in to a system that you are trying to build here at Texas. On top of that, Larry Fedora builds offensive juggernauts wherever he goes. And he does that using the similar system that Tom Herman wants, which is an RPO-based spread game or a run spread game. That's what the big focus is. He also does collaborative play calling, a thing he's done since his days at Southern Miss. Honestly, reading up on him, this hire makes a huge amount of sense, especially since he's worked with Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, wherever he's gone, he's done really well. I wasn't super familiar with him over the past few years, but I think I, along with a lot of other people, got familiar with him through, you know, getting a quarterback picked very high in the draft, and Mitch Trubisky, and, you know, winning a good amount of games at North Carolina as well. So, like you said, think not only did he have a little bit of a PR gaffe earlier in the year, he kind of had some results to go along with it that were just a bad combination for him, and led to Mack Brown getting his old job back, however that works. So their decision to let him go is Texas gain, and, you know, he's got chops on the wall in recent years about his offensive successes, like you've showed. So this should be something that only helps Texas, and, you know, if, even if it's only for like 1 year and he finds another job, so be it. You had him for that 1 year.
Specifically, the chops he has are as a spread guru. Like Herb Hand, we did an entire episode on Herb Hand's background. This is kind of a little bit similar to it, mainly because, like Herb Hand, he was under Rich Rod, or he wasn't under Rich Rod. He learned his system through watching Rich Rod's system from far away. While he was at Air Force, he was watching Rich Rod. I believe he was at Tulane at the time. Build his system that emphasized tempo and the no-huddle system that Rich Rod became known for. He took that and he built the offensive philosophy on mainly four different cores, utilizing 11 personnel. Very much like Tom Herman, he uses the A-back, which in Tom Herman's offense would be the H-back, because it could be a more productive use of the traditional fullback role. He uses verbal cues and hand motions to cut out huddle, which is something that Herb Hand does. He's multi-tempo, which is very much like Tom Herman. He wants to slow the tempo up and control it when he can, but if he wants to step on the gas, he can go ahead and do that. And he attacks where the defense allows, which helps with the no-huddle approach, but for Tom Herman, it's very much that RPO that he's addressing. Fedora addresses the aspect of leaning heavily on run, the run-pass option to really take what the defense gives him in certain situations, which is what Tom Herman really wants to get more towards. With these systems, he's been incredible wherever he goes. Besides the end of UNC, he has broken records on offense for every school he has attended and had a major coaching position in. His first offensive coordinator stint at Middle Tennessee from 1999 to 2001, he had 43 school records. His offense broke 43 school records. In 2004, his offense at Florida led the SEC in six statistical categories. In 2010, other Southern Miss, he had 35 school records. His first year at UNC, 40 new records for that school, tying eight others. But the main one that I'm looking at is in 2006 at Oklahoma State. His offense finished as one of two teams nationally to average more than 200 yards both on the ground and through the air. And that is big for Tom Herman because, like Tom Herman, he doesn't specifically focus on the pass or the run game. He really wants to balance the two out, and he does so using the RPO and quarterbacks. He's very, very good as a quarterback coach, and that is what Tom Herman probably brings him on to be because, you know, I don't know about you, Joe, but I'm not completely sold on Tim Beck yet as a quarterback's coach. Still, I mean, you know, Sam Ellinger has made leaps and bounds, but I think a lot of that has to do with some help from Tom Herman. So bringing in some extra help behind Tim Beck with a lot of analysts will really help out Sam Ellinger, will really help the progression of other quarterbacks in the product line. I'm excited for what he can be as a quarterback guru for Texas.
Right, and I think you may be slightly overstating what his hands-on influence might be, because Tim Beck is still going to be the guy who spends the most amount of time with this position group. Herman will definitely be involved, and Fedora will be in there some, but this is Tim Beck's position group. He's the quarterback's coach. He will get it. He is responsible, obviously, to Tom Herman for their development. So it's not like Fedora is going to be, you know, conducting a bunch of drills. I don't think he can even be on a practice field. But he brings influence. He brings all these ideas on, you know, what was so successful, what got those dual 200-yard stats. He brings that knowledge. He brings a lot more than that, too. He brings, you know, like I mentioned, head coaching experience that Tom Herman is obviously very lacking in. This will just be his fifth year and his third at Texas. That's severely lacking for big-time head coaching, to be quite honest. So I don't think you'll see a lot of on-field I don't think you'll see as much on-field effect. Maybe, you know, a wrinkle or two from North Carolina, but what you'll definitely see is a lot of, you know, program influence, I believe, and some different ways things are run that are possibly like North Carolina used to do, but have worked for a while and were part of why those North Carolina teams were so successful.
Right. I completely agree. He's going to be mostly an influence in the film room, on board sessions, X's and O's behind the scenes, not so much having a direct hand on the field, or maybe so not during the practice sessions. He'll have more of something behind the scenes where he's helping younger quarterbacks grow in the film room, quarterbacks like Sam Ehlinger grow in the film room, and take next steps in their recognition of defenses. You can see this from guys like Marquise Williams, his quarterback at UNC, who plays a lot like Sam Ehlinger. He was a little bit more run-heavy. Usually for Larry Fedora, he liked to use his quarterback 4 to 5 times per game to prevent injury. I know, right? Marquise was a bit of a departure from that. 6'2", 220, as like Sam Ehlinger. He was very much used like Sam Ehlinger, but Sam Ehlinger had a lot better passing ability naturally. But they used him like Sam Ehlinger in the game. So another little token that he can help Tom Herman with. He's already gone through the Sam Ehlinger approach to playing football. He can help Tom Herman polish his approach. He's had multiple success with guys, and specifically in film rooms, and understanding inabilities or where they lack, their deficiencies. One major thing I can think about is Blue Raider Middle Tennessee quarterback Wes Counts. When Larry Fedora was over top of him, he led the NCAA in pass completion percentage and was 72.6% in 2001. Now, he wasn't a great quarterback. He wasn't. But Larry Fedora understood, hey, here's where these different defenses are going to try to attack him, and if we can really focus on keeping it to the boundary side and really downplay the deficiency of what analysts put as his weak arm and make the other teams play a decoy to the field side, it's going to really, really help out Wes Counts' ability to get the ball down the field and into the hands of their playmakers. Think the same thing for Sam Ehlinger and Texas. If Sam Ehlinger has some deficiencies in his passing game, which trust me, he does, if he can have any sort of help, any help at all in making sure that these deficiencies in Sam Ehlinger and quarterbacks going forward can be downplayed and get the ball in the hands of guys like, Jake Smith or Jordan Whittington or Brew McCoy, then I'm really about this hire. I mean, you've seen, as you said, Mitch Trubisky. He's had a lot of quarterbacks in the past where he has taken their deficiencies and really turned them around on their heads through playbooks, through, you know, on-field coaching, but a lot of it through his ability to help through the playbooks, which, again, another thing that Texas is really, really going to get from him is his play-by-play database, which was reaching back nearly 25 years. I mean, the binder?
Oh, yeah.
That's as Tom Herman as you can get. Having Larry Fedora's play-by-play database, he was really basically into advanced analytics before it was actually a thing. Larry Fedora was back in early 1990s. He started building this play-by-play database of every single play that he could get his hands on so that he could understand and have a big database to help him statistically narrow down a variety of play calls available based on down, distance, and defense they are going against. So basically situationally filtering out plays to understand, all right, this is the statistically, you know, money ball. This is statistically the best chance we have at getting the statistically, you know, most necessary yards for this situation. That is as complex as Tom Herman wants. I mean, the binder is complex, but this play-by-play database, from what I'm reading, is pretty complex, and he has used it quite a bit specifically for his offensive coordinator roles, which, again, Tom Herman, he's been talking about, you know, Tim Beck was the original play caller, but he's trying to get into this new thing in the coaching circles, which is play calling by committee. And I know fans, when they hear that, it is not a happy thought. That usually comes around when people are like, okay, so they really don't have a play callers. But for Larry Fedora, apparently, when it came to having a play caller, that was really downplayed because of the ability they had to really make things simple. I mean, that was the goal. The goal is simplicity. Carry two or three concepts into a game that can be run out of multiple formations and that answer multiple coverage looks from the defense. This helped with practice time. Like when UNC found out that they could spend less time practicing goal line sets than most teams do traditionally due to it not being as big a part of the game as most people actually think. So they were able to focus on other parts of the game to help their offense become, you know, break 48 records. So it's a really, really exciting hire, I believe. And then that also gets into, you know, David Beatty and the potential defensive analyst on the other side of the ball. David Beatty's an entire thing. I mean, I think he would have been part of the staff if it wasn't for the Kansas stuff, Joe. I don't know about you, but I mean, having him as an analyst right now, it's going to help Texas in multiple ways, having this much brain power in this program. As you said, Texas has so much money. It seems like they're finally investing it in themselves.
Right, and the positive thing about being the home for wayward coaches, especially as analysts, is the old school's still paying them. It's very likely that, you know, Larry Fedora will get a very small amount of money from Texas because he's still getting paid a good amount by North Carolina. That kind of seems to be what the hang-up is for, you know, David Beatty right now, is a contractual issue of what I think it's been reported. It's, you know, whether he becomes quality control or an analyst and how that affects his Kansas contract and, you know, legal stuff that I don't really know at all. But still, because if you're doing that, I think that's one reason that we don't really kind of acknowledge as to why Saban gets so many former head coaches to come in as analysts. It doesn't cost them a whole lot of money. I mean, granted, when you have a lot of them, it's basically paying for another assistant coach money-wise, but they're coming in and getting paid by their own school. So you're getting a lot of work for your team on another team's dime. And if Alabama can do it, Texas should very likely be able to do it as well. And like we've mentioned a bunch of times, go the route of the west of the Mississippi, home for wayward coaches.
And to add on to it, one final point to this entire tirade, it's not like they're picking up just any old coach who was an old head coach and bringing them in. It's not like they're going out and getting Jim Grobe, who was a former head coach, and hey, you know, want to be part of our analysts. They're getting guys who make sense to the schemes and what they want to do going forward. It's well thought out from what I'm seeing from a bird's eye view. I'm a fan of it from concept to concept. It's a good thing, and it's very exciting as a guy who covers Texas. Another thing that's very exciting as a guy who covers Texas is the weekend that Texas had last weekend in recruiting. So let's go ahead and let's get away from the team news and get into some of this recruiting stuff with Jalen Garth and Mookie Cooper committing to Texas. That was big, getting those two guys for two different reasons. Let's go ahead and start with Jalen Garth, though. Joe, what do you think he brings to Texas?
He brings obviously a big want to succeed at Texas. If you're going to play with your teammate, your quarterback, you obviously have a pretty good motivation to be there, to, you know, protect a guy you've known for so long. But also, you know, he's pretty good at protecting him. He could probably work on both sides at tackle because he's got, you know, very quick feet. He's got a lot of room to build onto. Like, Herb Hand likes finding his offensive line prospects, doesn't like a bunch of big 315, 320 pound guys unless they show the athleticism of these 275, 280 pound guys that he keeps targeting. But he's just another.
Which makes RJ Proctor sort of a question for me, but go ahead.
Right.
Sorry.
So he's just another example of one of the best guys in state who fit that mold and had a lot of built in connections to really build off of. A couple other schools recruited Garth really hard. Texas A&M and Arkansas seem to be some of the other names associated with his recruitment. But, you know, this was one Texas should have won. There's no real good reason for Texas not to have gotten this recruitment and closed it out, and they did everything right and obviously earned the commitment this past weekend.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest accolades he can have is he was Billy Lucci's second favorite tackle in this class behind Chad Lindbergh. We'll see what happens going forward, but I agree. He brings to it a want-to. He brings to it talent as well. He also brings to it name recognition, and for guys like Zach Evans, who are really keeping an eye on this offensive line class, for guys like Chad Lindbergh, who are keeping an eye on their friends getting to this offensive line class, that's big for Texas's offensive line class. I mean, it's really looking like a legitimate possibility of getting Chad Lindbergh and Damian George into this offensive line class. Knock on wood, knock on, you know, throw salt over my shoulder, do everything. But that's what it seems like. It's a possibility. It's a true possibility. And if that happens, this class will be a lot of fun. But like you were saying, his abilities on the field are what might be one of the most impressive things. I think, again, he's another guy like Jake Majors, who I take a really big step up, is very underrated in this class. I really liked his technical abilities and his size. He's not as polished as Jake Majors is. He's not as polished as other guys can be. But from what I saw, he was very sticky in pass protections. He's very sticky, which means that if he gets a hold of you, he's holding on. And what the other guy I've seen do that is Samuel Cosme, and we've seen what he can do here. He is a bigger version of that from what I can see in tape. So if that can translate to the next level, if he can keep that stickiness, that ability, if he gets his hands on you, it's game over. You're not moving despite all your hand moves. Even if he has a guy, I mean, he went against Tavondre Sweat, who is a good defensive lineman. If he can get his hands on, fight through that hand play, the defensive tackle, fight through the power, fight through speed, he can work inside, outside. He's a great offensive guard, a great offensive tackle, offensive lineman. I'm very, very excited for Texas's ability for pass protection with him. Besides that, good technical ability. He knows where to put his hands. He has really plus feet and agility, which helps him use his size against faster rushers. I'm a fan. I'm a really big fan. There are some things he could clean up, you know, his pad level. I'll go ahead and break out the spring analogy. He gets up a little too high, too fast, which means his pad leverage is, it could be better. And I kind of use pad leverage. I use an analogy of the spring. The most power you can have in a spring, potential power, is when the spring is really condensed, when it's low. And it's harder to push over because it has a lower center of balance. But if the spring is already up, that means it doesn't have its potential power. It's easier to tip over. And you can apply those rules to offensive linemen. If they can keep their pad leverage low, they can be very explosive and they can have a low center of balance, which can help against bigger defensive tackles and be explosive against speedier ones. If you can get that down, if you can get that pad leverage down, I'm a fan of Jalen.
Yeah, just looking at the composite rankings, that gives Texas three of the top seven O-linemen in the state, and they still have a good chance of adding at least one, possibly even two, of the other remaining in that seven. So just, you know, part of taking advantage of really good in-state class for the offensive line, guys up kind of up and down the line, whether they're centers, guards, or tackles. But I agree with you completely. I think that's also something that, you know, high school offensive linemen struggle with a lot because they're usually not playing equal competition. They can get away with that, and you know, especially for somebody who's 6'4", he's definitely going to have to be able to anchor and hold his ground a little bit better than maybe somebody taller than him, because there's not as much, you know, he doesn't have the leg, the possibly the length of the body length to Coyle's, maybe somebody else who's a couple inches taller. But all in all, he still does a lot of things really well, and you know, has room to grow, and is joining what appears to be a healthy offensive line program, or what seems to be on its way to becoming a healthy offensive line program. And you know, hopefully we'll see him in a couple of years and know exactly what he can do.
And as you said, Texas is killing it so far, offensive linemen in state, but they're also killing it out of state so far in terms of their potential guys who could get into this class. I mean, you have Kelly Ringo, Savelle Smalls, Justin Flo. I mean, the names are tantalizing. But they also just landed Mookie Cooper out of St. Louis. Woo! another Texas connection to St. Louis, another pipeline into that St. Louis, especially Trinity Catholic, which has a few more guys coming up to the pipeline in 2021 and 2022. It's a good pipeline to have, especially into St. Louis, which is kind of, you know, underserved market. They have Phoenix and St. Louis, which are two underserved markets in terms of recruiting, both been hammered by other schools. But now Texas is starting to get into that, and they got Mookie Cooper, who might be one of the most explosive athletes in the nation.
Especially if you look at his stat line. I think his, you know, I think he averages something ridiculous on all his receptions and on his carries. You know, 28 receptions for 834 yards. So he's got basically 30 yards a catch. His yards per carry, I don't have his exact carries in front of me, but you know, he saw the end zone a lot. He's just an explosive guy who can do a lot, both from in the backfield and in the slot. And it kind of goes to the whole, you know, getting players who can do multiple roles on offense and being able to move them wherever to get the right matchup. He's definitely one of those guys. And you know, going back to your St. Louis comments about tapping into a market and pipeline there, if it weren't for how well Texas may have recruited Marcus Washington, they might not have gotten Mookie Cooper. And I think you could also even reverse it. If Texas hadn't recruited Mookie Cooper as well as they did, maybe they don't end up with Marcus Washington. But both of those guys being comfortable with Texas, you know, Marcus sticking with Texas over the in-state school kind of showed Mookie, you know, this is a place you can come and succeed. This is a place you should come and give a look at. And Mookie, you know, took that plane ride with Marcus this past weekend and decided Texas was the place for him.
Right. And as you said, if you get that ball in his hands, he's another guy like Jake Smith, but even more left to right speed. He has that shuttle speed. He has that 40 speed. If you get the ball in his hands anywhere, then he's going to be good. And they want him as a slot wide receiver. That's where they're telling him right now, okay, this is where you will likely play sort of the H-back slot role. So I think that's perfect for Texas. That's what they need. That's what they're kind of trying to get towards is, and you can see that, is less what little Jordan Humphrey brought. And little Jordan Humphrey was just kind of like, all right, we're going to make our offense around this big guy because that's what we have on campus. And turn it around into something that he's more comfortable with, which is speedy, fast water bugs on the slot wide receiver position who can touch the ball and turn it into a touchdown.
Yeah, and something I'm wondering if he allows is tight end in the Texas offense is Y and slot is H. But sometimes I'm wondered, you know, you can have a running back and maybe have Cooper play H a little bit, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, maybe even as a second back and have an inline tight end. It also depends on what Tom Herman may want to do substitution wise, but he allows for a lot of different things in this offense. And as long as you can continue to recruit around him, set up some complementary pieces, have that big X, maybe have another little Jordan Humphrey type slot to pair with him and continue to have that speed at the Z position, he'll be set up well. So he's a guy that I think what DeShawn Jamison was given this year,
I was just about to say
he could see something like that maybe in his first year, but I have to think he'd be a lot better at that, a little bit more natural at it than Jamison, who had experience with the ball in his hands, but maybe not so much on offense.
Right. Yeah, he is DeShawn Jamison. He's going to be a DeShawn Jamison type player, but built for the position more than DeShawn Jamison was. So that's what I think you can expect out of Mookie Cooper coming into Texas, as well as help out of state with recruiting. the thing that I'm gonna be worried about is I'm not sure how solid Mookie Cooper is to Texas. He was a little bit wavering before his Texas commitment on whether or not he wanted to go visit more places. When we asked him if he still wanted to visit other places, he's like, I haven't talked about that. I honestly don't know. So that is something you're going to have to keep an eye on, is how solid is this commitment?
Yeah, I'm not sure it was, I don't know, I'm going to go visit more places, or I don't know. To me, it kind of just sounded like, I don't know, I just committed today. I haven't thought about that yet. I'm thinking about this school.
Right. I mean, that's something, is the fact that he didn't say, I'm shutting down, you know, you keep an eye on it.
Right.
That's just what I'm saying. You keep an eye on that, just, you see, all right.
Yeah, but you keep an eye on it, as you should every out-of-state recruitment.
Right. Yeah, if he's an out-of-state guy, you're keeping an eye on him. But hopefully he turns into a Jake Smith situation where the longer it goes, the more he sticks to the decision and the less you have to worry about him. Going off Mookie Cooper, who came in for junior days down with the Washington family and a bunch of other St. Louis kids, there's junior days. Junior days was last week. We didn't get to preview it last week because of craziness in my personal life and Joe's. But Joe, let's go ahead and review it. What stood out to you from all of the reactions from junior days?
Last year, it seemed like after a 7-6 year, they were definitely building on the previous renovations and selling that and selling a vision of the future without a whole lot of results yet. But what they were still selling was very strong. Now this year, it seems like not only were they still continuing to sell physical improvements, specifically the new south end zone that they'll have in a few years, and that a lot of the recruits that they're recruiting right now will be using, but they also had, you know, actual physical evidence of success. It was a little different. They previously had physical evidence of you know, new improvements and not much of a vision for football success, and it kind of flipped. So, but they, and both those pitches are extremely strong now, and stronger than they ever have been at Texas. And it makes Texas a place where a lot of these guys may not end up being able to play there, but a place they want to visit and try and get to learn more about the program. I think the other thing that's pretty important is there were several priority, you know, very top of the board guys in the 2020 class that didn't make it in this weekend. There were still some very big priority guys who did make it in, and, you know, especially earning a recruitment out of it. But there was a lot of solid 2021 guys like Preston Stone, who could be the quarterback mm-hmm. this year in the state of Texas, or for his year in the state of Texas. Latrell Neville, a great guy from the Houston area, a wide receiver who seems to really enjoy talking with both Maringer and Meekin. And then, you know, the list kind of goes on and on as far as 2021 goes. A lot of names that I recognize, and some names that a lot more people will start to recognize over the coming months.
Yeah, a lot of offers there as well, like Kitten Crawford. Joshua Eaton got his offer there. You had Josh Harris there. You know, well, I always get the Brock Myers confused.
Tommy's the big one. James is the smaller 2021, and Blake is the redshirt freshman walk-on linebacker.
Okay. You had a lot of guys there who were really big names. Another one you missed for 2021 was, he told me how to pronounce it, Tumiche. I like Tumnus from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. That's what I originally saw. But Tumiche? Oh, God, I'm never going to get this.
Tumiche. Let me look at his name, because I don't have it. I think it's Tumiche Adele.
This show in names, until we get an official pronunciation guy, we are going to struggle.
Yeah, Tumiche Adele.
So there is a lot of guys there that had Texas offers, were big Texas targets. I agree that was a big initial reaction, was how many guys they got in to actually come and actually got quality time with them. But what stood out to me from the reactions was how big of an impact a guy like Herb Hand is making, especially with all these offensive linemen. That's one name that I heard over and over and over and over again. I think even Mike Craven tweeted out how many times he heard it and how big of an influence he's having on this recruiting class. Him, Rashad Samples, Brian Carrington, of course, those are the names that I keep on hearing. Jason Washington, those are the names I keep on hearing over and over and over again. It's just like, okay, Texas has had trouble with offensive line, and they've been called the 7-on-7 program this entire time, but they look good with guys like Alfred Collins. They look good with Vernon Broughton. They look good with almost all of their offensive line targets. It's looking good in that perspective, and then you have Rashad Samples and Brian Carrington being a team of just go-getting young recruiters for Texas. It's a good combination to have. Oh, yeah, and Dayton Jason Washington on the side doing his thing. It's a good, good mix of coaches to have here, and it's really paying off dividends, especially, as you said, with the Sugar Bowl actually being in Austin. They can show that off, and we're now seeing the power of, or the potential power of, a fully functioning Texas force.
Yeah, exactly. And I think mentioning Rashad Samples, especially after we've talked so much about analysts, kind of need to call out the quality control distinction. He's actually a quality control coach, I believe, for the receivers, since he's played that back in college at Oklahoma State and in high school. So not only does he help coach the team, he is able to recruit in a similar fashion that Brian Carrington was, I believe, on campus and showing those guys a good time. He, like Fedora, also fits in that role, and that, you know, you can either go and get an old head coach who the old school is paying and you don't have to pay that much, or you can get a guy you believe is a young up-and-comer and mold him, and maybe someday if a position opens up that Rashad Samples could, you know, ascend to assistant coach, a guy who knows your program through and through. So another one of those things that Texas is utilizing that's also helping itself out on the recruiting trail.
Joe, let's go ahead and go on to this point. Who do you think was the most important player there? Or maybe two?
Ooh. I don't know if I can think of most important off the top of my head. I think getting Xavien Alford back was a big deal. I think he is, when you're facing offenses that stress versatility so much from their receivers and even some of their other, you know, pieces like running back and tight end, you need defensive backs that are equally as versatile. And I think somebody who's as versatile in his coverage ability and ability to, you know, play in the box if needed, as he said he would love to do, as he claims he's the best at in his class, I think that he's a really important guy for Texas to, you know, I think they have safety targets, especially with Chris Thompson in mind. But I think Alford is somebody equally as important in this class. Another one in the 2020 class, if I had to give it a guess, I would go ahead and say somebody like, as I read through this list, Princely Umanmielen, a guy from Manor, Texas, also just outside of Austin, guy who is one of the defensive lineman targets. May not be very highly ranked, but he's a guy, you know, growing guys on the offensive line. They also like to grow guys on the defensive line. And when I went out and talked to him, said he was 6'4 and a half, 260 pounds, and that's, you know, something that Oscar Giles and Todd Orlando and Yancey McKnight can make a pretty good nose tackle out of. So I think getting those two guys on campus, continuing to build relationships with them specifically, because you kind of need one nose a year almost, and if Princely's going to be the guy, you don't want to really have to start to circle back, because I'm not sure how many other quality nose targets there are in state. And then Alford, he's just, you know, a guy who, if you're facing these, like I mentioned, these versatile defense, you want versatile defenders, and he is just that.
Well, I'll tell you the guy who you are missing, Vernon Broughton at nose tackle. He didn't make his way there. He probably would have been the most important in my eyes. I think Princey Umanmielen is a really good pick there, but I think Mookie Cooper probably is one of the more important guys on campus. Getting him on campus was probably important. Maybe not the most important player, but the most important player to get on campus probably. So to lock that up, to get that going, because he was starting to waver, as we said, and decide, hey, you know, maybe Texas isn't the place, and maybe I want to look around a little bit before coming back to Texas. No, they locked it up there. They made sure, hey, you know, remember why you liked it here. And he was like, yeah, I remember why I like it here and why I was so high on Texas all over Twitter. So he went ahead and committed. Another guy who I think probably was one of the more important players there. It's hard to pick. I would actually go with maybe some 2021 guys. I think either it's difficult. Probably either Landon Jackson or Tamisier Adeleye. Both those guys in that defensive line class are going to be studs. Landon Jackson for Pleasant Grove, 6'5", 230. His film is in frame just sell themselves. Tamisier Adeleye. His body sells him. I mean, dude, that dude's big. Mm-hmm. That dude is big. He moves fast. He is scary. So I am all about those two guys. I'm all about a lot of these 2021 guys coming on the campus. That's who I think are some of the most important guys to really get an early start on, because, you know, some of these guys, you know, there's Dwight McLaughlin was on campus, but really you're going to try to start building some relationships, especially with this junior day, with guys from the next class, so that, you know, they're not going to get all the one-on-one time they could get with meeting the coach face-to-face, but getting them on campus and getting them initially interested and starting to build that relationship with a bunch of these guys or strengthen that relationship is what's going to be really big. All right, let's go ahead and get into Under Armour. This past weekend, there is the Under Armour All-American Camp in Houston. A big event for everybody who likes to scout players. Really, Joe, I think the guys in the headline of the entire event were the offensive linemen and the defensive linemen. I was less than impressed with the wide receivers and cornerbacks. I mean, besides Jalen Jones and Demond DeMoss, you know, quarterbacks and wide receivers were having a little bit of communication issues. Quarterbacks are having trouble throwing the ball. It was a little bit messy out there. So when you go to look at the big guys, and there was a lot of names there.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I probably spent, 70% of the time watching defensive and offensive linemen if I could, as opposed to the other skill guys. And yeah, it was great. A point I made to you when we were talking before the show was that, you had some slight concerns, or maybe some points of improvement, possibly for Logan Parr. I'll let you explain that, but I may give a little preemptive strike and say this is a guy who is going to who knows he will be a center at the next level and will probably, at these camp series go through playing center in order to learn how to do it at the next level and get prepared for it. But for his high school team, for Elodis O'Connor, he was at left tackle last year. Haven't been able to ask him specifically, but I would assume that'd be the case again this year. He's a guy who probably has been splitting time between these two different offensive lineman spots, which might explain why you maybe not had an issue with him, but maybe weren't as impressed as you thought you would be at this camp.
Right. For a guy who has a composite of 94, I thought I would be pretty blown away by him. Don't get me wrong. The guy has a good motor. He's very smart. Dude's a goofy dude. He's a really goofy dude. He's a guy you can get along with very well. He's smart. I like the guy. I like the guy. I like his body. He's got a good frame. He's a little smaller than I thought he would be, but that's good. It's fine for him being an offensive guard. What kind of threw me off was the whole spring analogy, right? Where the spring has the most power and the lowest end of the balance. It's hardest to turn it over when it's pushed down and low to the ground. Logan Parr, he had a lot of trouble staying low to the ground, keeping his pad level low. And a lot of that started off from the very jump. As soon as the ball came up, he stood up. He moved backwards. And when you move back, your initial reaction is to bring your shoulders up out of their stance. And once he did that, he was beat quite often by guys who were bigger and could get their hands on him. He did not have the explosiveness and the punch to really beat these guys. And what you're looking for in these camps, because the offensive linemen are severely disadvantaged against these defensive linemen, is if an offensive lineman wins, you know that they have very good technical ability, which is why we'll get later into the show. Joe and I were really, really impressed with Donovan Jackson out of Episcopal High School. He's a 2021 offensive tackle, or Hayden Connor out of Katy. He's a 2021 offensive tackle. Both those guys won basically every rep because they are very, very solid technically, not just relying on their strength.
Yeah, I thought Donovan Jackson was without a doubt the best offensive lineman there. I think I didn't see him lose a rep, and every time I was watching him, I thought he was just technically proficient. He's right now as a sophomore, he's just lacking a little height, but everything else looks great so far.
And he has a little bit of bad weight, but that's something that can be easily fixed at the next level. What Logan Parr flashed greatness. I mean, he had three pancakes of the day. That's hard to do, especially if you're an offensive tackle trying to play guard against these big boys. But things like hand placement were an issue. Most times he had trouble getting his hands in the correct spot. He usually brought his hands out too wide and too high, which gave defensive linemen an easy way to knock his hands away and get inside and get even better leverage against him. And that's what this game is. I mean, it's all about leveraging yourself and figuring out, okay, how can I be more powerful than the guy in front of me? You can do that in the weight room, but an easy way to do that is get the leverage. And there are simple things in his game that if he can improve on them, if he can learn and polish his game, I would be very impressed with him going forward. I didn't see those things, and I was a little disappointed in that. I think he has a few things he really does need to fix, and I feel like I, on the Football Brainiacs on our website, I kind of pointed those out. You can see them in tape, but there were things that I thought, okay, hey, you know, I'm going to nitpick here and say, you know, initial step back off the snap was bad. His setup step, it wasn't so much a setup step as it was just a backup step, which hurt him, kept his body upright. Things like that, I needed to see better things. But, Joe, who did impress you?
Well, I think the two guys you mentioned, Demon Demas and Jalen Jones, definitely impressed me. I think they did bears repeating again. Another guy I was very impressed with, you mentioned, was Vernon Broughton. I thought he had a great day on the defensive line. He was able to really play well from everywhere. I think he's another special talent. Another guy who I was impressed by is a guy from my old high school. I believe his name is Chidera Ume, 2021 defensive lineman. He had a really solid day as well, and I believe he works with Vernon Broughton, and you know, he showed a lot of promise, and I know there's some stigmas associated with TAPS players, but I thought he showed himself well there and might be a guy who can maybe get some Power 5 looks down the road.
Yeah, I agree with Vernon Broughton. I do like his size. I do like his speed. I do like his power. If he can just go, he likes to play around at the offensive line a lot. If he can just go, if he cuts out maybe, you know, two of his three spins, then I think he's good to go. So I do like what Vernon Broughton brings to the table. I also liked what a guy, I mean, we also talked about Donovan Jackson. We talked about Hayden Connor. I really liked what I saw out of Alfred Collins. I liked his size. I liked his ability to get under the arms of offensive linemen and get that leverage that we've been talking about, that oh-so-precious leverage. So I did like what I saw out of Alfred Collins. I think he's a guy who is like Charles Omenihu, but a little farther ahead in his development. So maybe not as high a ceiling as Charles Omenihu does, but a lower floor. I don't think I can overstate how much I really did like the 2021 offensive tackles. I mean, that's going to be a special class right there. There's a lot of guys like Donovan Jackson, Hayden Connor, Reuben Fathery. And honestly, I liked Hayden Connor and Donovan Jackson better than Reuben Fathery, but I like Reuben Fathery's frame better. And he looks more like a big offensive tackle. He's still growing, so I don't know. If you can get inside his arms, I think he's beatable. But the other guys, I think they have very good technique, and if you can clean up Reuben Fathery, he's beautiful, but it'll be interesting to see how he progresses going forward. So, Joe, that was last week. Let's go ahead and break down this weekend's visitors. We have a big weekend visitor group filled with a five-star running back, a cornerback who just got an offer, another cornerback who just got an offer, and a safety who might be one of your top targets. Let's go ahead and start with Kendall Milton. What are you expecting? Who is Kendall Milton?
Well, he's a five-star from California. He's a running back from out there. And it seems like this year that there's a trio, maybe even like four or five elite running backs, Zach Evans, Chase McClellan, and Milton included in that group. And a lot of coaches are trying to figure out, you know, where they stand with that group before really attacking other targets. And Texas is trying to see where they stand. I mean, they have a good feeling of where they stand with Evans and probably know where they stand with McClellan, who remains committed to OU but still visits, and trying to see where they stand with Milton. And I think as long as he's a guy that shows interest, that's a really good plan, and maybe something comes out of it. I think it's, you know, it's worth it, especially if he's a guy that, you know, with USC, I don't think involved in his recruitment at all at this point. I think all of his, in his top list, all the schools were out of state. So, you know, maybe you convince him that a plane ride is a plane ride and he can be the next Californian to, succeed at Texas at the running back spot. And I think there's a pretty notable name that did that here about, you know, 21 years ago.
Yeah, he's a big back. I mean, he is a guy who he runs like Chris Warren, but he's not as big as Chris Warren. He's not as fast as Zach Evans, but he has the same low center of gravity as Zach Evans. He is a really, really good running back. I mean, you can't go wrong with Zach Evans or Kendall Milton if you have to choose. If you have to make a decision, I mean, you're picking between
Zach Evans.
What'd I say?
You said you can't really make a wrong decision between Zach Evans and Kendall Milton.
Yeah,
Zach Evans.
Right. Personally, would go with Zach Evans, but if you have to go with Kendall Milton, oh boy, you know, really picking up the scraps there. So getting him on campus, seeing where he is right now in his recruitment, seeing where Texas stands, that's going to be big. And if he really does feel like Texas is a place he can go, then putting on the Brew McCoy pitch and really trying to get him to Texas. Then Joshua Eaton is the next guy. They gave him out an offer last week. We didn't see him in the Under Armour because he had food poisoning from Texas's barbecue. So they're getting him back on campus to try again.
go to a different restaurant this time.
Yeah,
or get
exactly.
Something else.
We're done getting catering from them.
Whoever it was.
Right. So Joshua Eaton, he is a very long, very athletic cornerback. I mean, if you look at what Texas is offering, who they're offering, that's exactly what the type of guys they are offering. Athletic, long guys, a la Jalen Jones, a la Kelly Ringo, a la Kenyatta Watson. I mean, Holton Hill.
Yeah,
type of guys.
All these guys are right around the same size. If I'm remembering correctly, I think Holton may be the tallest, but all these guys are right in that 6'2" range. Really long arms. That's what they're looking for in cornerbacks. I mean, it's kind of it's box A and box B for this Texas defensive staff. So all those guys fit it. Joshua Eaton fits it. And another guy in the Houston area that it's a place that they recruit extremely well and leverage connection with, and see if they can do that again with Joshua Eaton.
With Jason Washington being his main recruiter, I'm pretty confident in Texas' ability to land him. They're going to have some major competition from places like A&M, but I feel confident Texas here. As confident as I did in Jalen Jones. So we'll see how that we'll see how that goes. But they also have coming in two safeties in Bryson Washington and Xavion Alford, both guys who are Craig Nivar's dudes. I think the top safety in the class for Texas would be Chris Thompson Jr. out of Dallas, but Bryson Washington probably playing a position similar to what B.J. Foster plays right now, and Xavion Alford probably playing something similar to what, where would you put him, Joe?
I don't know. I mean, you can really use him anywhere. He's possibly at nickel.
That's
but
what I was thinking.
Maybe it's something where you can drop him back to safety on a play. Like he's very versatile. He's a guy that you can teach multiple spots over the course of his career. Bryson Washington, maybe a little bit more traditional safety role, not somebody as versatile as Alford. But I'm really excited about him. I think he's one of your bigger safeties and can definitely come down and play in the box a little bit. And, you know, depending on where offenses go in this conference, play in the box a lot.
Yeah, Texas is going to need a nickelback in this class badly after they missed on Jalen Catalan. I think Xavien Alford is a guy who is athletic enough and he is versatile enough to do that position, although he can be put basically anywhere in a place where they keep on saying, yeah, we're putting the best six defensive backs on the field. We don't matter what position you are, we're going to figure out how to get you on the field. Having a guy who is versatile, probably very, very helpful.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think that's going to end it off for us. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Or you can find my writing at texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at josephcook89, or you can find me on insidetexas.com.
Or you guys can find us and our other podcasts on the Hornscast channel. We will not have a pretend we're football this week because there is no basketball really this week, besides, I guess, Oklahoma State. We're going to do that next week. You guys can find those shows on the Hornscast on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play. Anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.